All right, we're going to start here by the Mishnah on Mem Tet Amud Bet. The Mishnah is a Mishnah that is parallel to a Mishnah that's found in Ohalot. In Ohalot, in Perek Bet, Mishnah Aleph, there is a Mishnah that has the same dinim. Some of them are different, which is key, because those differences are unique, halacha l'moshe misinai in Nazir. That's number one. And number two is, there's some items that are missing, or have a little bit of an additional explanation, and they will help us understand this Mishnah as well. So, Elu Tumot, a Nazir Migaleach. What tumult does a nazir have to be migaleach, which means which tumah is sufficient grounds to be considered tumata meit that would undermine the nazirut for the nazir? So ala meit, the first one is on a cadaver, on a meit. Val kezayit min a meit, or a kezayit min a meit, the obvious question which the Gemara will have to address is, if you have a kezayit min a meit, that is mitameh, then what do you need meit for? Meit, by definition, will always include kezayit min a meit. For that, we have to come up with an answer. Val kezayit netzel, that's another thing that we will deal today. The netzel is the liquid that emanates from the body of the cadaver, whether that's from the decomposition of the body or whether that's from liquids that emanate from the body. Val malol tarvad rakav, and a spoonful of a decomposed meit. The Gemara again today will explain what is Mlo Tarvad, means a spoonful, a ladleful, but the Gemara will discuss the size of what that is today, what measurement is. Ala Shidra Valagugolet, the spine and the skull. Now, so far, all these items that we've mentioned so far are all mentioned also in the Mishnah in Olot. Over here, you can see Tosafot explains, when we're talking about the Shidra and Gugolet, Afal Pish Ein Aleha Basar Klal. The Chiddush here about the Shidra and the Gugolet is that there's no flesh on these items, so they in of themselves will create tumata meit, even without anything else that we've mentioned until now. But a skeletal remains. Val eiver mina meit, val eiver mina chai, sheish alav basar kira'ui. Again, here, similar to the Mishnah in Olot, we're talking about whether it's an eiver that left a person who was alive, or an eiver from someone that has passed away. But here, it's not sufficient that it just be an eiver. It has to be an eiver that has flesh on it that is kira'ui. Kira'ui means that it is sufficient flesh that it could actually grow back. I mean, had the limb been attached to the individual, if this was the amount of flesh on it, that it would heal and that it would then remain intact. So you need enough basar in order for that to be the case. And over here again, Tosafot comments, afal pi shein bo kezayit basar. That's assuming it doesn't have a kezayit basar on it, because otherwise you'd be captured by the kezayit basar before. So here we're talking about something smaller than a kezayit basar, but it's enough basar that would sufficient basar or flesh that would allow the limb to heal. All right, v'chatzi kav atzamot. So here we have a break from the Mishnah in Olot. The Mishnah in Olot says, rova atzamot, which is rova kav of atzamot. And there it says, mirov binyan, O mirov minyan, that comes from the rov of the minyan or the rov binyan. So first of all, in our Mishnah, it says chatzi kav atzamot. So that's the first thing. So even though tumat oel and tumat amet, as far as the Mishnah olot are concerned, by a rov kav, a quarter of a kav would be sufficient grounds for tumah. In order to undermine the nizirut, you need a chatzi kav. So this is halacha l'moshe misinai, but it's a key difference between here in the Mishnah olot, which tells us that Nazir is not only about tumat amet. There's certainly unique dinim with regards to Nazir, that he has a chatzi kav atzamot, not a rova kav atzamot. The second thing is the Mishnah in Olot specifies mirova binyan or mirova minyan, that this bucket full of bones has to derive from what's called rov binyan or rov minyan. Rov binyan means the majority of the standing structure of a human being. The Gemara and the Mishnayot and other places discuss that includes the shukayim, the rechayim, and the shidra. If you were to take the spine, and in the legs you took the thighs, and then the lower leg, in that the shukayim and the rechayim, so if you took those four bones that deal with the legs, and the amuda shidra, and the spinal column, that would equal the height of an individual. So if you have the rove of that, then rov binyano would be if you had any three of those bones. So if you either had the spinal column and two of the leg bones or three of the leg bones, then you have the rov, what's called binyan. So then that's the rov binyan. Rov minyan, the Gemara assumes there are 248 limbs And the Mishnah in Olot, this Mishnah says that half of that would be, or the row would be 125. So that would be the number here. Now, the way that it's learned in the Mishnah in Olot, it says, Meirov Binyan, O Meirov Minyan. It doesn't mean that you have to have the Rov Binyan. It doesn't mean you have to have the Rov Minyan. It just means that the bones that you have here that fill that amount, the Rov HaKav or the Chatzi Kav, derived from the skeletal remains that were of those parts. The Rov Binyan or Rov Minyan. And you can see that Tosafot over here mentions it as well, which is Velekale Frushe Chatzikav Misharat Smoch Enimiro Binino Velomirubino Taboel Namilo Mitame. So he says that you can't explain it, it didn't come from the Rov Binyan or Rov Minyan, because even in an Ohel that would not be Mitame. So Tosafot says, don't try to explain the difference between the Mishnah and Olot and the Mishnah here. The Mishnah Olot says Rov Akav because it's talking about Mirov Binyano or Mirov Minyano. But over here, when it says chatzi kav, it means from other bones. Don't explain that way because it won't work. Because without the rov minyan or rov binyan, there is no tumat ol. And so therefore, the chatzi kav cannot be relevant. So here, it's alocha l'moshe misinai, that it's a chatzi kav atzamot, again, that derives from the rov binyan or rov minyan. As long as that's where it derived from, and this is the quantity that you have, then that would be soter din zirut. Then, val chatzi log dam, a half a log of dam. And again, over here in the Mishnah Olot, it's actually the next Mishnah, it's Mishnah Bet and Olot. Over there, it's Revi'it Dam. So as far as Tumata Ol is concerned, you only need a Revi'it of Dam. On the other hand, here in the Mishnah, you need a Chatzilog Dam. This is another Alokha L'moshe Misinai, where for the Nazir, even though there's Tumata Ol with Revi'it of Dam, Chatzilog of Dam will be necessary in order to be Soter the Nizirut. In the Mishnah and Olot, there's a Machoket, whether the Revi'it Dam must derive from a single mate, or even if it derives from two mateim. And as you pointed out, we just saw this recently with the word Nafshot. When Rabbi Kiva is Darshni Kol Nafshot mate, the fact that it was written in plural, Nafshot, says that it can derive from two mateim. But that's a question in general, whether it's the Revi'it Dam of Olot, or you would say here, the Chatzi Log Dam of Nazir, you have that question, is it only from a single mate or from multiple mateim? And that's subject to the Machloket that's brought in Perak Bet, Mishnah Bet, and Olot. And all these items, Amagan, Vamasan, Vahilan, mean that these items grant Tuma in all three of these methods, which is if you come into contact with them, you carry them, or you're found in the same Oel as them. So all of these items create Tumat HaOel. Val Etzem Kisse Ora, a bone that is the size of a barley seed, Amagao Vamasao. So a bone of that small nature, that small size, has Tumat HaMeit associated with it, but does not create Tumat HaOel. Therefore, if you come into contact with it, you carry it, you would be Tameh. But if you're in the same Oel as it, it would not affect you. That's both for Tumat HaOel as well as for Stirat Nazir. Aleilu HaNazir Migaleach. On these items, the Nazir is Migaleach. You can see the Mishnah begins, Aleilu Tumot HaNazir Migaleach. And now repeats, Aleilu HaNazir Migaleach. So the Gemara will ask, why do I need you to say that twice? What's the ribuy that comes out of this? Umazeh bishlishi ubishvi'i. This is the normal process of tara for anybody who's tamei tumat tameit, that you have to get sprinkled on by the para duma on the third and seventh day. Vesoteret hakodmim, which is the din with regards to nazir, which it undermines the previous count that you had done in terms of nizirut. Ve'inu matchil limnot, and you do not start counting the new count, ela ad shi taher umeviyat korbanot, until he becomes tahor, brings his korbanot to tuma, then he can begin the process of counting the nizirut, how much he has to make up. We've discussed in the past, if it's okar the entirety of the nizirut, is it okar 30 days of the nizirut, how much is it okar, possibly depending on when in the nizirut the tuma happens. So that's subject to the machloket rishonim that we've discussed earlier in the mesechta. Right, Tanu Banan, achar p'tirato shel Rabbi Meir, amar lehen Rabbi Yehuda l'tamidav. After Rabbi Meir passes away, Rabbi Yehuda says to his students, Ayikansu tamidei Rabbi Meir lekan. Do not allow the students of Rabbi Meir to enter. Mevnei shekan taranin hein. They are argumentative, provocative. They are not necessarily easy to work with. That's a nice thought that the word might mean from the word contrarian. It would be interesting also. Whereas the Mefarish seems to indicate it comes from the word torturous. Velolimol torahim bayin. They're not coming to learn, but they're coming to catch me. Catch me with mistakes that I made or differences that I have with Rabbi Meir. So now, first of all, Rabbi Meir is known to be very sharp and very bright. The Gemara in other places talks about the fact that many people could not be omeid al da'ato shel Rabbi Meir. They couldn't understand completely Rabbi Meir's piskei halacha, and that it was difficult to grasp entirely what he was saying. And therefore, the reason that we don't paskin halacha like Rabbi Meir in many instances, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi both trump Rabbi Meir when it comes to the halacha. That's what the Gemara in Erevin tells us. And that likely is because people could not understand. Not because Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir was very bright and extremely sharp, but nevertheless, since we couldn't completely understand what he was saying, that means that he could convince you of anything. He could convince you that it was this way or that way. And if you can't come to an understanding of what he is saying, then we can't pass an halacha that way because you can't really argue on his positions. And Rabbi Yehuda seems to be, in this case, saying something similar, which is the Talmidim of Rabbi Meir are coming to learn. They're coming to, you know, catch me and show me that I'm wrong, or Rabbi Meir has a difference of opinion. Nevertheless, dachak sumchus v'nichnas. Sumchus, who appears in the Mishnah in numerous places, is famous for his position in regards to Nezikin, which is Mamona Mutal B'Safek. Mamon that is left B'Safek, Chokim, which is his position versus the Chachamim, which is a Motziach Mechaviru Alav Araya. So Sumchus appears in the Mishnayot, Rajas, the Talmud of Rabbi Meir. He gets in there, Amar Lehem, Kach Shanali Rabbi Meir. Says, this is how Rabbi Meir learned this Mishnah, similar to what we have. So he goes in and starts at our Mishnah. Kas Rabbi Yehuda, v'amar lahem, lo kach amarti lachem, al kansu talmidei Rabbi Meir lekan. He gets upset as a talmidim. Had you let one of Rabbi Meir's talmidim get in here? Mipnei shekantaranim hein. Again, they are argumentative. They are contrarian. Val kazayit min amet, migalayach al amet, lo koshikein. So his question was, if you have to get if the Nazir is affected by Gezayit bin Amet, then what do I need a mate for? Isn't that obvious? So now Rabbi Yehuda, at least according to the Mefarshim here, did not have this problem because he did not have al amet in the Mishnah. Meaning that he says, if you look in the Mefarsh, Vamar, Zuena Mishnah. He basically says that's not the right way. You have the wrong girsa in the Mishnah. Now that's at least according to the girsa that we have in the Mefarsh, but you can see that there's a little aleph, and the Zchot HaRivan says, Ein HaTzrichat Talmud, that this, we doesn't need explanation, we can clarify, this is not an issue. It's not a hard question to deal with, because the Gemara is, in a second, will show you what the meaning of it is. It seems that either Rabbi Yehuda did not have that Girsa in his Mishnah, or that he had the Girsa, but he had a clear way to explain it, which the Gemara is going to explain in a second, of how to deal with it, and therefore he didn't feel like it was a good question. And he says, they're just coming to Kapcheni, it's Irene, to make it difficult for me, make it hard for me. So I'm a Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi, again, who is one of the Baal Plukta, you have Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, who are contemporaries in our Baal Machlokot throughout Mishnayot. I'm a Rabbi Yossi, Yomru Meir Shechav, Rabbi Meir passed away, Yehuda Kas, Yehuda got angry, Yossi Shatak, and Rabbi Yossi was silent about this whole thing. Torah Mate Alea. What's going to happen to the Torah? I mean, you have a question here that's being raised, and no answer is being given. Rabbi Meir is no longer around to deal with it. Rabbi Yehuda refuses to answer the question, whether that's because he doesn't have the girsa, or whether because he thinks the answer is easy, and he doesn't want to deal with the Talmidim of Rabbi Meir. Meantime, everybody who's sitting there, you have a question that's not being addressed. So there's nothing being resolved, and Rabbi Yossi says, "B'makom shenish, I got to stand up, and I got to deal with this. I'm Rabbi Yossi." Talking about a mate that doesn't have a kezayit basar. When we're talking about kezayit basar, mean a mate, that's one type of tumah. The other type of tumah is a mate that doesn't have kezayit basar on it. So now what are you going to say? You're going to say, oh, a mate. What is an example of a mate that doesn't have kezayit basar on it? So you're going to say that it is an aver. An aver doesn't require a kezayit basar. So even if you say here, we're talking about a mate that does not have a kezayit basar, then you're already brought into the next piece of the Mishnah that says that from an aver min a mate, a limb from the mate, even if it doesn't have kezayit basar on it, you're still tamei tumat a mate. So if there's sufficient grounds from that, what do I need the mate for? If you have a whole mate, even though it doesn't have Gezayit Basar, in the mate there are all these Evarim. And one single aver would have been sufficient grounds for it. Ella, kedama Rabbi Yochanan, it is like what Rabbi Yochanan said. Kedama Rabbi Yochanan means that Rabbi Yochanan said it somewhere else. Where is the other place that he said it? Now the Gemara in Chulin has this sugya of Rabbi Yochanan, but as the Bali Tosfot point out over here, when it says kedama Rabbi Yochanan, it means that Rabbi Yochanan's reference was to the Mishnah in Olot. That Rabbi Yochanan said this about the Mishnah in Olot, and now the Gemara is taking that and applying it to our Mishnah as well. Because the Mishnah in Olot also starts out with Hamait and Kazayit Min Hamait. So the same question that's relevant here is relevant to that Mishnah in Olot. So the answer that Rabbi Yochanan gave for the Mishnah in Olot will be equally applicable over here, which is, Nitzrucha la Nefel shelo nitkashru Everav Bigidin. The case here where you have a miscarriage, or you have a premature baby that's born, who's not fully developed. Since he's not fully developed, lo nikashru everav, his limbs are not fully formed, there is no limb here to speak of. And there's also not a kezayit basar. That's what the Mefaresh says, that this is a nefel, shelo nikashru everav begidin, right? The sinews or the form of the gidim has not come to full maturity or full fruition. And therefore, you can't say there's too much aver here, because there are no avarim. You can't talk about kezayit basar, because then that's already considered a kezayit min hamait. So then you're talking about here a mate, meaning that's a full mate. And because it's a full mate, therefore, that's what creates the tumah. And that's what Mefaresh says, afal pi she'ein alav basar. He says, even though there's no basar on it whatsoever, you could argue that it's a case here where there is basar on it, but it is less than a kezayit basar. So you have to find a whole mate that doesn't have the component parts that are mentioned in the Mishnah, because those component parts by themselves would make you tameh. How do you do that? You use a nefel, which isn't fully formed, and because of that, it doesn't match or doesn't have the component parts that we speak about in the Mishnah, but it does have this character trait, which it is that it's a full mate. And that's why it's mitameh, because it's in its full state, not because of all the other little components that we mentioned in the Mishnah. That is Rabbi Yochanan's solution to the problem here. Again, the Mefaresh says, Afal pi she'ein alav basar. In the Tosafot over here, it says, V'it bo kezayit basar. That this nefel has a kezayit basar associated with it. And you can see over there that the Angod Ronchenberg in Ot Hei says, Tevat v'it nimchak, v'nirbay de'ein bo kezayit basar. So he changes it. If you say eat bo kezayit basar, then you're back to almost the square one, which is, then how is that different than kezayit basar min hamait? So now you could argue that kezayit min hamait means when it comes from a fully formed mate, that's when kezayit basar matters. But here on a nefel, maybe the kezayit basar doesn't matter because it's not fully formed. That's one way to deal with the Tosfot. Or the other way is to deal with the girsa, which says ein bo kezayit basar, which is then slightly different than what the Mefaresh says. Mefaresh says there's no basar whatsoever. Again, Tosafot might suggest there is basar, it's just not up to the level of a kezayit basar. Because that's what we're trying to address here. We're trying to address why this mate does not have a kezayit basar, as well as why does it not have evarim. The solution is to say that it's a nefel, that either doesn't have basar, less than kezayit basar, and also does not have fully formed limbs. So too over here, again, he said it by the Mishnah in Olot, and now we're applying it to the Mishnah here in Nazir. Rav Amar, lo nitzrecha el lerov binyano, o lerov minyano, she'ein behen rov atzamot. What happens when you have a case of rov binyan and rov minyan that does not have a rov atzamot? So now, we mentioned in the Mishnah, by the way, that there's only a chatzi kav is the threshold for Nazir. Rov atzamot comes from the Mishnah in Olot. So that opens up issues with regards to the Rova statement. Why is he mentioning Rova Atzamot, which has no relevance here by Nazir? It only has relevance by Tumat Oel. So therefore, they say over here that it's a Chiddush that he's saying this, that even though this wouldn't, Rova Atzamot wouldn't be sufficient to undermine the Nazir, nevertheless, it would be sufficient grounds for Tumat Oel. And despite that fact, it creates a Tumat here that would be undermining in nature. Why? Because you have Rov Binyano, or Rov Minyano. So those independently are something that would make you Tameh. Why this is interesting and why this makes a lot of sense is the Mishnah in Olot has a category that's not mentioned in our Mishnah. The Mishnah in Olot includes another category that's Metameh Ba'ohel, which is Rov Binyano, Rov Minyano Shomet, Alpha Pishain Bahan Rova. That's, the Mishnah has a case like that in Olot. Our Mishnah mentions nothing of the sort. So when Rova comes along and says that that's what it's coming to include, when you say the mate is coming to include Rov Minyano, that doesn't have Rova Kavatz Mot, he's basically adding in the one category that's found in the Mishnah in Olot that does not appear in our Mishnah over here. And for that reason, it would make a lot of sense that he's trying to include that. As Tosfos points out over here, Mishum de matnitin ba'olot k'tani behedja, arov binyan, arov minyan. De metamei ba'ol, kihilkach, leka lefrushe hotam, ala meit, elek Rabbi Yochanan. So now, what Tosfos points out is, Rova's explanation is great for our Mishnah. Rova's explanation does not work in the Mishnah in Olot. Because the Mishnah in Olot says, Alameit, Valkazait bin Ameit, similar to our Mishnah, but also has Rov Binyan and Rov Minyan explicitly mentioned in the Mishnah. So Rova's explanation is a sufficient explanation for our Mishnah over here, but it's not a sufficient explanation for the Mishnah in Olot. And therefore, what he points out is that Rova would have to at least agree with Rabbi Yochanan with regards to the explanation of the Mishnah in Olot. Because he can't explain the Mishnah in Olot according to his reasoning, because it's explicit in the Mishnah that's there. Tosafot then says that some Sfarim changed the girsa here in Rova to say, Lo nitzrach ela l'shidra v'gulgolet she'ein bo Rova atzamot. It's talking about a spine or a gulgolet that does not have Rova atzamot. That's based on the Gemara upcoming on Nun Gimel, and there the Gemara quotes it from Rova as if he had said it somewhere else. And we don't find anywhere else where Rova said it. So what they do is they change the girsa here in Rova to match the Gemara further on, to say this was the source, or this is where Rava said it in the first place. Tosafot rejects that, and says that you can't say that. Our Mishnah says, Shidra v'gulgolet explicitly. So how can Rava say that that's what the Mishnah is adding by mate? Because the case of Shidra and Gulgolet in our Mishnah is a case of mate, and as Tosafot pointed out on the Mishnah itself, it doesn't have basar on it, and it must be a case where there's less than a Rova Kava Vatsamot. Otherwise, what's the relevance of that in the Mishnah? And therefore, he rejects this alternate girsa in Rava, rather keeps the girsa that we have here, and says that Rava's explanation, therefore, cannot be on the Mishnah in Olot, but rather must be in our Mishnah here, because in the Mishnah in Olot, again, it's mentioned explicitly. That's the explanation of the word alameit in our Mishnah. It's either a case where, talking about a nefel that doesn't have a kazayit basar, whose limbs are not fully formed, or we're talking about rov minyano, which is 125 bones, or Rov Binyano is 3 out of the 5 bones that we mentioned before, the 2 thighs and the 2 lower legs and the spinal column. If you have 3 of those bones, then you would have Rov Binyano. If you have those, even though they don't add up to a Rov Kavatzamot, or by Nazir, they don't add up to a Chatzi Kavatzamot, it would still be Tamei Tumatameit and would be Oker the Nizirut. And now the Gemara asks, Kazayit Meit Bakazayit Netzel. Vezu netzel. What is this netzel? Basara mate shikarash. It is the flesh of the mate shikarash that is hardened. So now it doesn't start out, it doesn't just go from basara mate to hardening, but rather it's decomposed mate that liquefied and then hardened. That liquid then turned into a solid. Umoal shirtiach. So here you have two explanations. The Mefresh says that moal shirtiach is that the liquid of a mate, or the solid of a mate, was heated up to a liquid form, and then in that liquid form, afterwards, it hardened. So now it's the same as the previous case, it's just a question of how did it decompose, or how did it liquefy. So in the first case, it liquefied by itself, and then it hardened. In the second case, that it came out of basara mate from something that was heated up, and then it became hardened. Likaresh ayidei ritichut, that the heat caused it then to coagulate or to harden afterwards. So that's the explanation according to the Mefresh. According to Tosafot, shirtiach means that it's an item that boils, that reaches a point where it will boil up and it will liquefy. These are liquids that, if they were heated up and boiled, they would bubble. And that's the way Tosafot explains it. That is the definition. Because close to the Mefresh, he says it's just a method to get to the solid piece again, to Karash. Tosafot says separately that it is the heating itself, that if it acts in a certain way when heated, that is what determines that it's a liquid from a mate. Hey, Chidami, what's the case here? Ilei medeloya dinan didideihu. If we do not know whether the liquid emanated from the mate, ki Karash, my havi. When it hardens, what does that do for you? Just because you have something that's hardened over here, if you don't know it's from the mate, then you can't say for certainty that it is tamei tuma tamei. Ella, diadinan, dididehu. No, we know it's a liquid that emanated for the mate. Afagab delo karash. If that's the case, why does it need to harden? As long as it's a liquid that emanated from the mate, then we should know that it's problematic. Why do you need it to harden? So what the Gemara is indicating here is that the karash, the hardening of that liquid, is evidence of the fact that it emanated from the mate. So that's what we're seeing here. According to the Mefresh, that's the only way you know it emanated from the mate is the karash. So whether the liquid came out of the mate, then hardened, or whether you heated it up and then it hardened, that's always evidence that this is a liquid that emanated from the mate. On the other hand, for Tosafot, there are two tests for a liquid that comes from a mate. Either it hardens, or if you boil it and it bubbles, that is something that emanated from the mate. But in either instance, then why do you need it to harden? Because you know, you saw that it emanated from the mate. You know for certain that it emanated from the mate, then you don't need it. You don't need this test. It's clear that it emanated from the mate. So now it's interesting. It starts out, the Gemara says, "Ein lema delo yadinan," that we don't know. Well, in case we don't know, means that we're unsure or uncertain. So but the Gemara's answer is going to be, "Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah bistam," it's a case where we don't know. So how's that different than the delo yadinan beforehand? So it must be that delo yadinan beforehand means that delo yadinan deihu is not that we don't know, but rather that we know for certain that it's not. It's the opposite of yadinan. We do know. Delo yadinan means not we don't know, but it's not. Or you have to say that delo yadinan is synonymous with stam. But now the Gemara is going to explain why that makes a difference. Others explain that delo yadinan means we don't know if this liquid is from the mate at all. But stam, Rabbi Yirmiyah's answer is that we do know it's from the mate. We're just not sure which liquid from the mate that we're speaking about. And that's the difference between stam and delo yadinan. That's the way the Tosfot explained it. As we mentioned before, the Mefaresh explains it as that delo yadinan means the yadinan delo. We know for sure that it's not from the mate. In order to avoid the stira or the difficulty with the word stam that Rabbi Yirmiyah gives, which seems to be a differentiated answer than from the propositions that we made until this point in time. Rabbi Yirmiyah, the stam, it's a case where we have a liquid here that seems to be associated with the mate, but we don't know. Ikarash mo'alhu. If it hardens, then it is liquid that emanated from the mate. Lo karash, if it did not harden, dilma kecho v'neo hu. Maybe it is liquid that emanated from the mate, but it's not from the mate himself. Rather, it is saliva or mucus from the mate that does not carry tumata mate, that does not from the body of the mate. It's a separate entity or liquid that is inside of the mate. Bodily fluids, but they're not fluids from the decomposition of the body that emanate from the mate himself. So here, the kecho v'neo would not harden. Or, according to Tosafot, if you boiled them up, they would not bubble. They would simply get heated, but not bubble, in the sense of the boiling, bubbling on the top. So that'd be indication, probably because they're more viscous, they don't bubble when they are boiled. So because of that, this is the test in order to figure out whether this is a liquid that comes from the mate, from the decomposition of the mate, or the residue that comes away from the mate. It's a liquid that comes from the mate himself, and not from liquids that were inside of the mate, or bodily fluids that were inside the mate. So now, bayimine abayimi rabo. Yesh netza lebeima, oin netza lebeima. Now that we talk about this decomposition, this liquid that emanates from the mate, is that only true by a cadaver? Or is that true also by carcasses? Is that true also by beimot? Mi amrinan, gemire netzel da'atu mi adam, avadati mi beima lo. Is it that the halacha of the Moshe Mi-Sinai, when we learned this, it was specified or specific about an Adam, has no application by a Beima? Odilma lo shna, or maybe it makes no difference. Netzel here is just described by Adam, because that's the more likely scenario. But even by Beima, it would be the same thing. So when it says, Anicha the mandamar tuma chamura ad the ger, v'tuma kala ad the kelev shapir. One who says that tuma chamura only lasts until the ger, but doesn't last until the kelev, then there's nothing to speak about over here. Here the Gemara is making a veiled reference to a machloket in the Gemara in Chulin as to tumat nevela. When it comes to tumat nevela, we know that a nevela has tuma associated with it, which has tumat maga and tumat masa. It's a higher level of tuma. How long or when does a nevela have tumat nevela? Basically, when is it called a nevela? A nevela over time will decompose. It will no longer be a nevela. How far does it have to decompose or rot before it's not considered an avela anymore. The machloket is it ad achilat ager? As long as it's still fit for human consumption, it has a din of nevela. Or, as long as it's fit for a dog to eat, then it's still considered to be nevela. Obviously, that's a different level. That which is fit for human consumption is a much higher threshold than that of what is ra'uy le'achilat kelev, something that can be eaten by a dog. The reason that the dog and the ger are mentioned over here is because of the psukim in the Torah. Because Pasuk says by a treifa, that you're not allowed to eat the treifa. Ubasar b'sadeh treifa lo tochelu le'kelev tashlichun oto. You throw it out to the dogs. By nevela, it says you may not eat a nevela.
Lo tochlu kol nevela. The ger asher bisharecha tinena v'achala.
Give it to the ger or the nachri timkaren, or you sell it to the goy. So over there, you have ger associated with nevela, you have kelev associated with treifa. The question is, which is the threshold by which it is still considered to be a nevela? Is the threshold the dog, or is the threshold the ger? Ger we're talking about here is a ger tushav, not a ger tzedek, who is a full-fledged Jew, and then obviously this is not relevant. But here, the question then is, a nevela, when does it still have the tumat nevela? So one opinion is, as long as it's ro'uy l'ger, as long as the ger can eat it, it's a nevela. Not ro'uy l'ger, not a nevela. The other one says, no, as long as the dog eats it, it's a nevela. The dog doesn't eat it, then it's no longer a nevela. So the way Tosfot explains here, damar tuma chamura is this added level of tuma that is associated with a nevela. That first of all, kazayit min a nevela, gives off tuma. And it has tumat maga, tumat masa, this higher level of tuma. That is ad l'ger. Tuma kala is tumat ochlim, which is that tuma that regular ochlim have, tuma that only convey tuma through a kabetza of item, and plus it only convey tuma through maga, not through masa. That's the way Tosfot says it. Other Rishonim say that it's talking about the nevela itself. The nevela itself, when it's on the higher level, when it's a nevela, has tuma chamura, and when it decomposes, and then it turns into less equivalent to a regular ochel, and then has the din of two regular tumat ochlim. And that's what the question is, where is that threshold? Now, if you say the threshold is with a ger toshav, when it's ra'uit for an achilat ger toshav, then this question never gets off the ground about the netzel of a be'ema. Netzel of be'ema, as you rightly pointed out before, is only relevant after a period of time of decomposition. It has to reach a point of rotting and decomposition where it's clear it's no longer ra'uit l'achilat ger, and it's no longer a nevela. To speak about netzel behema for the opinion that says that if it's not ro'i the ger, it's not a nevela, there's no way that you're going to have a nevela that has netzel that is associated with it. But, elo lamanda amar tumah chamura ad lekelev, the one who says that tumah chamura of nevela or tumat nevela applies until it's not ro'i lechilat kelev, then you have a possibility that the meat will decompose, but decompose to a point where it's still ro'i lechilat kelev, but you have netzel now that is associated with the body. And then it's a question. Ma'ikal ha-meimar, what's the din? So Tashma, the Gemara brings, it tries to bring a proof from here. Himchu ba'or. If they liquefied it through a fire, through heating it up, tamei. Bichama, if they liquefied in the sun, then it's tahor. So how you liquefy this netzel will make a difference. If it's liquefied through a fire or liquefied through the sun. It says, if you think until it's not ro'i l'achilat kelev, it's still considered to be a nevela, then why when it's heated in the sun, is it not still considered to be netzel min habeima and tamei? The fact that it's not shows you that there is no netzel from a behema. Mar says, no, you don't have to say that. Emot mimachile. When does it become liquefied in the sun? Butter dasruach bichama, because after it's already rotted in the sun. Came in the asruach avalei afar. It's already been sitting out in the sun that long. Then it's already like the dirt of the earth. I mean, it's no longer considered to be even netzel min amet. It's decomposed so much that it's not even in the category of nevela anymore. So one of two ways to explain this: either that when was it put in the heat of the sun? That was after it was already rotted and decomposed. So now when the sun is beating on it, after that point in time, and that's what causes it to liquefy at that point in time, you're way beyond, first of all, the point where it's ra'uy l'achilat kelev. In addition to that, whatever you produce over here is not going to be anything that is relevant to the mate anymore, or to the, over here, the carcass of the animal. And then the other way to explain it, which seemingly is what Tosfot says over here, is that it was out in the sun. The reason that it liquefied was because it was in the sun. But when it was in the sun that long that it liquefied, it first rotted. And it rotted completely to the point where it's no longer a carcass. And therefore the liquid that you're talking about here is not a liquid from a carcass. It's a liquid that is already from something that's so decomposed that it's no longer any association with the carcass or the original carcass that was there. So therefore it rotted or it decomposed so much that it's not ra'uy la'achilat kelev, and therefore it's clearly not a nevela or deemed to be a nevela anymore. So that's how the Gemara answers. We don't have any proof from here, because here would apply both bechama or ba'or. It seems that the chama reason why it's not considered to be mo'al or it's not considered to be netzel is not because there's no netzel min ha'behima, but rather because it's gone beyond the point where it would have any consideration. All right, now the Gemara says tnan. Kol ha'nitzok tahor. Anything that flows is tahor. The case here is based on a Mishnah in Machshirim. There's also a Mishnah in Tarot, a similar Mishnah, which is that you're pouring a liquid from one utensil to another utensil. The lower utensil is tamei, the upper utensil is tahor. And you're pouring the liquid out from the upper to the lower utensil. That upper utensil would not become tamei, and neither will any of the liquids in the upper utensil. Even though when you pour it, there's a stream of liquid that connects between the upper and lower utensils. That's not considered to be a chibur, mostly because it can't be reversed. Which is that if you stop pouring the upper, whatever was in the airspace is going to flow down to the lower one, and will not come back towards the upper utensil. And so because of that, there is no chibur, there's no connection between them. So that's what it means, kol nitzok tahor. Chutz, with the exception of midvash hasifim v'hatzapichit. These are two exceptions to the rule. The dvash hasifim, according to most, is that dvash that comes from a place called zif. And that's why it's called dvash hasifim. The Gemara in Sota brings an alternate opinion that it is from the word mizuyaf. You can cheat or be sneaky with it, which is, since the honey is so thick that you can add water or wine to it and add that, I call it, to the weight or the volume, and people wouldn't notice because the thickness of the honey would cover up anything that's added to it. Today, our dvash is clear. Our dvash has a certain amount of purity and clearness to it that if you add something else to the dvash, it's visible in the dvash. On the other hand, this dvash of Zifim was so thick and cloudy that it was impossible to see other liquids inside of it. So that's the two explanations, Machlok Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish in the Gemara and Sota, as to whether it means it's a location, dvash from this certain location that was very viscous, or is it dvash that's so thick that the properties allow you to be mizayif, to cheat, or to falsify the fact that it's dvash, because you can add other liquids to it and they will not be noticed. Either way, we're talking about honey that is extremely thick and viscous. Batzipichit, the tzapichit, most say this tzapichit the dvash, that's mentioned by the man in the Torah. And tzapichit dvash is something along the lines of, we'll call it a Danish, but it's something where there's flour and honey that are mixed together, Danish dough of sorts. Tosfot brings a possibility that this is natural honey, meaning that stuff that is taken directly from the honeycomb itself. And because of that, it creates a much thicker mixture in the honey. It's not standard honey, but honey with the flour and maybe even oil that's added to it. And because of that, it becomes much more, again, thick and viscous. And so that's what we're talking about here. The Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot mentions Sabichit is also a name of a place, and it's Dvash from that location. It's unclear where he got that from, but that it's also a location here. But the basic gist of what's being said in the Mishnah, it doesn't really matter what the exact definition is. We're talking about items that are super thick. And since they're super thick, they are considered to be a chibur. The Gemara now will try to clarify why that is. And because it's so thick, it makes it as if it's a solid that is connecting between the two utensils. And that's why there's a chibur over here, because it's basically it's one big solid now. Because it's so thick, it's no longer deemed to be a liquid, it's deemed to be a solid. That's one possibility. The other possibility the Gemara calls riray, which is that what you're saying is not exactly true. But when you pour a liquid that's very liquidy, then again, when you pull up the upper kli, whatever's in the air is going down. Then when you're talking about very, very thick items, then when you're pouring them, when you pull back, it's true that 90 or even 99% of it will continue down. But there's a little pieces at the end, what they call riri, that will pull back into the kli. And that's what the Gemara is going to clarify in a second as to which of those two reasons is what creates the chibur over here. So Beit Shammai omrim, af ha-mikpash shel grisim v'shel pul. Even this dish that's made out of beans, pul are whole beans, grisim are milled beans that were cut in half and then made into this very, very thick, I'll call it almost porridge-like, a dish when the beans are boiled up in this manner. B'vnei shehi soledet la'achorea. Now they say the reason is because it pulls back when you're pouring it. So Bayi Rami Bar Chama, Yesh nitzok le'ochlim, o ein nitzok le'ochlim. Is there a nitzok? Nitzok means is there a connection through pouring for food items? Or is there no connection for food items? The Mefaresh over here brings the question in one of two ways. Is the question on Beit Shammai or is the question on the Rabbanan? As we'll see later on, based on the Mefaresh's answers here, that there are two possibilities as to whether the question here is on the Sheet of Beit Shammai, within the Sheet of Beit Shammai, or is this a question on the Chachamim that argue on Beit Shammai, or that seem to speak about Devash, and not Pul and Grisim. It's unclear at this stage. Later on in the answer, the Mefaresh will give two explanations as the answer of the Gemara, and each of those answers will depend on how the Gemara started. Was the Gemara's question originally on Beit Shammai? Or is the question of the Gemara here on the Stam position that we have? The Mefaresh explains over here. Hare meirik mikpa shel adashim o shel apunim. If he's pouring lentils or peas, again, which are items when they're boiled up that create a thick item. But makom midron, which is like a descent of some sort from the malo lamato. Are the upper items tamei or why is it that they are considered to be a connection? Because they have rire. They have this stickiness to them that pulls it back. And therefore, they are tamei. And these food items don't have this concept of rire to them. Or, what's the reasoning is because they are thick. And that thickness creates it into a chibur. And they will be true by other food items as well. So that's the way that the Mefaresh explains the question. The question is about other ochlim. Other ochlim, like adashim and apunim, do they have the same din as devash, tzipim, peas, and lentils? So do they have the same properties as devash? Or do they not have? And that goes back to the question you asked before. What is the property here that makes it a connection? Is it because of the thickness? And these have that same thickness. Or is it because of the recoil, that it pulls back a little bit of the liquid, and these don't have that. While they're thick, they don't pull back. They don't have that type of stickiness, viscosity, like honey, which would pull it back after you had finished pouring it, would take some of the chibur back into the pouring utensil. So that's the question according to the Mefaresh. Tosfot, on the other hand, says, Yesh nitzok to'ochlim kagon himcha shuman b'irao l'toch ochlim. What happens if you heat up something that was a solid and now make it into a liquid? So as opposed to the Mefaresh who says the question here is about a solid item, a solid food that has some liquid properties to it, which is things like these lentils that are boiled or peas that are boiled up. So that's what Tosfot's question comes along the lines of what you're asking, which is if you take fat and liquefy it, what is the din then of the liquefied fat? And it's the Rabbanon Kemitai Melei. And he's asking, according to Rabbi Abayim, do we say it's because of Rire? That it's because of the recoil that's there? That's why it's a Chibur. And therefore, these Klomarshins, these don't have that recoil that's associated with them. Or, is it because of the thickness that connects between them? And therefore, these other items also have that thickness that is associated with them. So Tosfot says it's a solid food that was liquefied. The Mefaresh says we're talking about a solid food. But they're both asking the question that the reasoning here is have to do with thickness and not with rire. And therefore, the grisim and the pul don't have sufficient thickness for this, but maybe if you get something with sufficient thickness, it would be like dvash. Or rire is the reason, but then you need serious rire. Serious rire, dvash has serious rire. But these items, they do not have those properties. So now Gemara says, Do we say the reason that Dvash is a chibur is because of this recoil nature of Dvash? Because it has to do with the thickness that makes it into like a single item. And these items are also thick, whether it's what the Mefarei says, it's these food items or substances which are very thick when they're cooked. Or, according to Tosfot, you took a solid item and liquefied it, so now it has properties of a liquid, but it's still got the solidness to it. So, Amar Rava, Tashma, Chelev Ameit, Shehu Shalem. You have Chelev from a mate that is whole. Vihitichu. And then you heated it up. Tameh. Then it remains Tameh. Haya Mifurad. If it was already separated, meaning you had small pieces of the mate. Vihitichu, and then you heated it up. Tahor. Even though now that they combine, it's considered to be Tahor. This is probably the connection to the previous Gemara. Even though it's not clear that there's a real direct connection, but here we're talking about heating up items of the mate, and we talked about here tiach before of the netzel. By the netzel, we talk about here heating up the mate and then having this become liquefied. So, v'isak datcha, eini tzokt ochlim, if you think there's no connection by ochlim, shalem v'hiticho, if it's whole, and then you heated it up, namili taher, it should also be tahor. What is happening here is that, say you have a pan here, a shallow pan that you're firing up, and then the piece of the mate's in there. When the piece of the mate goes in there, it liquefies. After the heat is removed, then it's going to solidify, re-solidify again. While it's a liquid, what is happening is that the liquid is dividing or separating. If that's the case, then if there's no nitzok de ochlim, if there's no connection or chibur be ochlim, then you have the equivalent of the second case that was quoted over here from the Tosefta and Olot, which is the case where it's Mifurad. It's already divided up. Once it's subdivided, you can't recombine it to make it into a single entity. So if you liquefy it and the liquid spreads, and that's not considered to be a chibur, then you don't have a single unit of make that would be Tameh anymore. And even when it recombines later on, that's not sufficient grounds for Tumah. So what it must see from here is that there is Nitzok by Ochlim, because if there was no Nitzok of Ochlim, then the items would not combine. Over here, the Mifreish brings two explanations and some background as well, which is that chibur bidei adam eino chibur. That's the first thing. That a chibur that is done by a human being does not create a chibur. And therefore, if you need to have a certain minimum shi'ur from the mate, it would have to be that it came from the mate where it was whole enough when you started that it has the shi'ur, the requisite shi'ur you need to have the tumah. That's number one. Tosafot here makes a couple important points with regards to this Tumah. He says we find in other places that even though items separated, when they are joined together, they can create Tumah. If you have two achatzi zayit of a mate, achatzi zayit of a mate, and they're in one oil, then the person is Tameh. So Tosafot at first suggests that that is true by Tumah to oil, because an oil can combine the items into a single entity. But through Tumah Magai wouldn't work. But then he also brings an example by the Mishnayot in Oalot, that a person who's touching two half zeitim of a mate would become tamei. So over there he says it must be a case where there's some connection between the two chatzi zeitim, some small connection between them that allows them to be considered a chibur. In addition, the principle that we established over here, that when you combine something a yidei adam, it's not considered to be a chibur, that's only true by tumata mate. Because yesh lomar dainu dafka b'tumata mate shetuma ba mimenu. The Tumah itself originates from the item. Therefore, if the item is broken down and then recombined, it will not have that Tumah because it's inherent Tumah. On the other hand, Tumah that comes from an external source, like by Tumah Tochlim, in those instances, maybe Chibur of Adam would help you to get to the requisite Shi'ur, and it would be deemed Chibur Shel Adam would be a Chibur. So Tosfot says, yes, you can prove from here that Chibur Adam doesn't work by Tumah Tameit, but that doesn't mean you can extrapolate it to other Dinim. Number two is, this is the Mefresh's first explanation, v'hiticho b'machavat na'amid li teher, came into migalgele mizavit zu lezavit zu, since the liquid then will flow from one side to the other, nifrat ze mizet separates, v'lo b'me kazayit mekunas, and you no longer have a single kazayit in one location. Inami, v'shiticho b'iriko mikli al kli. It's a case where he heated up and then poured it from this kli to another kli. V'abi ki mifurad, it'll be separate v'li teher. So the Mefresh brings two possibilities as to what the case is here in the Tosefta, where he took the solid piece of chelev from the mate, liquefies it. Now, either if you say that it's liquefied because it moves from the pan, side of the pan to the other side of the pan, and you're saying that liquids are not considered to be attached, you've lost your entity now. And even if you were to allow it to harden afterwards, or you hardened it afterwards, it wouldn't help you because chibur b'dei adam is not considered a chibur, and you wouldn't have your kezayit mikunas. You wouldn't have enough gathered together in a single location to convey tumah anymore. From now on, this item will no longer grant tumah for someone else. Or, the mefarish says, in that case, it's not a question that it remains a single entity. When you're frying it up in a pan and you heat it up, that's a single entity. The question now is, when you pour it out of that pan as a liquid to another kli, then if it's not a chibur, then you've lost your kezayit mikunas b'makom echad, and it will no longer be tameh. Even after you're finished pouring the entire amount into the bottom pan, it lost its connection along the way. And then when it's mikunas again, it's chibur bidei adam, and it's no longer relevant. So it's one of those two explanations as to what the Gemara is saying here. So that's the question here. And the mefarish, the question between the two explanations is, if you just heat it up in a single pan, is that already considered to be separated? Or you have to pour it to another pan in order to generate that separation? If it was in one pan and you heated it up, that would always remain as one unit because it's always together in the one pan. We wanted to know if there was nitzok by ochlim. And what he's trying to prove from here is that there is nitzok by ochlim, because otherwise, the first case in the Tosefta is not relevant. When you heated it up and liquefied it, how could you talk about tumah anymore? Because it lost its properties where it's mikunas, because you say there's no such thing as nitzok by ochlim. Either according to the first explanation of the Mefaresh, because it already spread in the pan when it liquefied and it's no longer one unit, or because you, in the second explanation, poured it from one to the other, and when you pour it to the other one, it's done. There is no connection anymore, and therefore you don't have it in one location. And now here, the Rosh brings a third possibility as to what the explanation is. He says, when you eat up a whole kazayit, it should also be tor. It's impossible through the eating process that one little piece of it didn't separate away from the core. When it returns to it, then it's no longer chibur. Because that's not considered to be ochlim. So the Rosh brings a third possibility as to what the question was, is that as you heat it up, it's a little drop that moves to the side or separates from the core of the liquid here. And then when it rejoins the liquid, that's not good enough because it's not considered a chibur along the way. And now you don't have your kezayit even when it rehardens at that point in time. So for the question that's asked, is there nitzok b'ochlim? What Rava suggests over here is, of course there's nitzok b'ochlim, otherwise this whole case in the Tosefta in Olot would not have any meaning, because otherwise it would automatically be considered not together. And since it's not together, you don't have a question about tumat hameit. The answer is, Amar Rabbi Zeira, Ana Umar Breid Ravina, Targamina, I and Mar Breid Ravina explained that Tosefta in order that it would not be a question about Nitzok Pochlim, which is, that it happened so fast, the heating was so extreme or so intense that either according to the Rosh, nothing could separate away. It rose quickly to the mouth of the thing because it was so hot. And then it hardened right away. So the heating happened at such an intense heat that it right away rose to the mouth of the kli, and then the coldness or cold air automatically hardened it, and there was never any separation. According to the Mefarish, the first explanation, it doesn't move from one side of the pan to the other because the heating happened so fast it liquefied on the spot, or it happened in a narrow space and time. Or according to the second explanation of the Mefarish, the answer is he didn't pour it. The reason that it hardened was because it rose, it was heated heavily, and then it rose to the mouth of the utensil, and that cooled it off, and that's what caused it to harden. You didn't have to pour it to another kli in order for it to harden. If you look in the Tosafot over here says, "Kigombadi demiratachle salik amud lepume demona." He does not have amud of the esh that we have in our Gemara. He has amud. It rose to the mouth of the kli and hardened. So therefore, Tosafot is not focused on the heating element of it, but rather the cooling side of it. And that it rose to the mouth of the kli, and that's what was the unique feature over here, not the heat that happened at an extreme heat or a very intense heat, that it all happened in one shot. And that's what he says here. It's Zarech Lomar, the Kerish, Apuma Demana, Dilo Karash, El Chazar Menafalim Mekomo, Enofol Yachad. that if it went up to the mouth of the kli and then dropped back down, then you'd have the same problem we had before. That's why it's describing here, it was lahid in such a way that it rose to the top of the kli and hardened immediately in that form. So now there's no longer a question of nitzok, because there's no liquid, there's no connection between the different parts of this item. Right? We say that there's no proof from here. Right? So now the Gemara goes on, Amalei Ravina the Ravashi, Tashma. Maybe we have a different proof from Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai omrim, afa mikpas shel grisim shel pul, mipnei shehen soludim la'achroyem. So what he's trying to prove here from Beit Shammai, and again, it's not clear, but he's saying, listen, Beit Shammai says that the reason that it is because soledet acharel, is that it recoils. So the first way that the Mefresh explains it is that Tashma from Beit Shammai, that there is nitzok by ochlim. Right, there is nitzok by ochlim, because Beit Shammai brings you an example of an ochel that has a nitzok associated with her. So the Gemara says, Midiria, what are you talking about? Maybe there is no nitzok by ochlim. And the reason that we differentiate between mikpash or grisim and other foods is because they have rire, they have the ability to recoil, whereas the other foods do not have an ability to recoil, and that's how we'll distinguish it. So according to the first explanation in the Mefaresh, the question revolves around Beit Shammai entirely, which is there a nitzok by ochlim? The answer is yes, because Beit Shammai shows you that there is nitzok by ochlim. The answer to the Gemara is you can't prove anything from Beit Shammai, because the reason they say there's nitzok by the grisim in the pool is because of rirei, so let it lacharea, because it recoils. But other ochlim, which are just because of the thickness, maybe they would not be like what Beit Shammai suggests. The second way the Mefresh explains it is that Beit Shammai shows you that ochlim do not have a nitzok, because Beit Shammai gives the reason for they are saying that grisin and pul are considered to be connected is because of soledet l'achareyen, because they recoil, implying that other foods which do not recoil, they would not be considered to be nitzok. They would not consider to have a chibur, a connection between them. My answer is midiria. You're talking about Beit Shammai. Who says that Beit Shammai's reason is the same reason as the Chachamim? You thought the question of the Gemara was in the sheet of Beit Shammai. That's not the case. The question is in the position of the Stam Mishnah, the Chachamim's position, not in Beit Shammai. In Ochanami, we can resolve what Beit Shammai says, but that doesn't mean we can solve what the Chachamim say. And if we don't know what the reasoning is behind the Chachamim, and based on that, you can't prove anything to the position of the Chachamim. You misunderstood the question as being directed towards the Shita of Beit Shammai. It's really about the Shita of the Chachamim. The Chachamim could argue on Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai says the reason is recoil, and that's why I include pul and grisim. Chachamim might say, no, the reasoning is chibur, and has to do with the thickness of the item. And maybe the Chachamim would agree that by ochlim, which really there is thickness, that it would have the same din as the Devash that is found in the Mishnah. So you can't prove to me anything about the Rabbanan's position over here based on what Beit Shammai says. So according to the first explanation of the Mefaresh, the whole question is within Beit Shammai. And the Gemara's answer is that you can't prove anything from Beit Shammai, because Beit Shammai specifies that it's a unique property to these pul and grisim, which doesn't apply by other ochlim. The second way to learn it is, no, that we want to learn from Beit Shammai that there is no nitzok by ochlim, because they explain the reason that there is nitzok by pul and grisin is because of the recoil features which don't appear by other foods. Gemara's answer again is, that's nice for Beit Shammai, you're right, but for the Chachamim, Chachamim might have a different reason. The Chachamim might believe it has to do with the thickness, nothing to do with recoil, and therefore according to the Chachamim, it's very possible that ochlim do have this din of chibur through a nitzok. Rostosvo believes Ravina was trying to answer that Beit Shammai will be mar'eh on the Chachamim, that if the reason that Beit Shammai says mipnei shi soledet achurea, that means it's the same reason as the Tanakam or the Chachamim in the Mishnah. Their question between them, as we explained before, according to Tosafot, is simply how much of a recoil is there. Chachamim require a larger recoil, like by Devash, whereas Beit Shammai has a lower threshold and says the recoil can be even by grisin and pul. Gemara's answer is midiria. How do you know? Just because the reason behind Beit Shammai's rerin doesn't mean that the Chachamim's reason is the same. Maybe the Chachamim's reason has to do with smichut, has to do with the thickness of the item. And therefore you can't prove anything from the position of Beit Shammai with regards to the position of the Chachamim. And therefore Ochlim might be included or might have a nitzok according to the Chachamim, because it has to do with the thickness of the item, nothing to do with the recoil properties of the item. Val Malo Torva Durakov, we talked about a spoonful or a ladle full of this decomposed or rotted mate. Become a shiuro. What's the shiur of this?
Obviously, the question here is that we're talking about a ladle, and a ladle doesn't have an exact size. So what does that mean? And now the Gemara is trying to bring a size to that spoon or that ladle that we're discussing over here.
Chizki amar melo pisat hayad. It means a palmful. Yochan amar melo chufnav. That it means a handful of the item. And whether that is, again, melo chufnav is a single handful.
As the Mefarash says over here, it's a single handful. It's a full fistful of the item.
Where the melo chufnayim, it's like a two hands pushed together where you're holding it between the two hands. Seems to be the explanation of the Rambam. Tznan. Melo torva derekev. It's a question here whether you should have the girsa of tznan. As you can see, it's a tosefta and olot. And there's some question amongst the Rishonim. Are they quoting the tosefta? Are they quoting the Mishnah? Malo torvad rakav shamru. Yeshnan mikar etzbaot ulamala divrei Rabbi Meir. For Rabbi Meir, it's the measurement is from the tops of the fingers. V'chamim arim malo chofnav. They're talking about the palm full of the item. Now the grove here changed the gisra from the ikar etzbotav to kishrei etzbotav. Kishrei etzbotav frame like the joints of the fingers rather than the ikar etzbotav. And we'll see, because now the Gemara is going to say it and uses the word kishrei etzbotav. So now, bishlama Rabbi Yochanan damar k'rabbanan. Rabbi Yochanan, who over here says melo chofnav, is following the position of the chachamim who say melo chofnav. Ela chizkiyah, come on. Who does chizkiyah follow? Lo k'rabbi Meir. He's not like Rabbi Meir, because Chizkiya says melo pisat hayad, which means that the palm of the hand, whereas Rabbi Meir is talking about the etzbaot, which are the fingers on the top. What's the connection between them? Velo Rabbanan, the Rabbanan say it's a whole fistful or handful, and Chizkiya is saying that it's only the palm of the hand. So the Gemara says, Amrei melo pisat hayad, umelo kishrei etzbotav lamala achad shirahu. That's one shiur. Your palmful, as well as the amount that you can hold from your fingers and upward, are the same measurement. In that if you divide your fistful or a handful of an item, if you divide it between what's in the palm and what is on the fingers, they would be the same size. The Gra points out from a Tosefta in other places in Shas that it doesn't seem that way, because they bring these measurements as a machloket in that Mishnah, so it seems otherwise. Amalei Rav Shimi Bardler Papa Mimai. He says, why do you have to say this? How do you know the high mikishrei etzbotav ulamala the rosh? How do you know mikishrei etzbotav? When it says from the joints of the fingers, how do you know which direction the breita is talking about? It could be mikishrei etzbotav from the joints, from the knuckles to the tips of the fingers. That's what we assumed until now. But when you say kishrei etzbotav, it could mean from the knuckles down to the wrist. So how do you know which way Rabbi Meir is measuring? And therefore, based on that, mikishrei etzbotav ulamala, the rosh means to the tips of the fingers, demalamata. I mean, today, maybe it means from the knuckles downwards, dahavale melo pisateya, which would be the equivalent of a palmful. And therefore, Chizkiya then would be like Rabbi Meir. Now, the gears over here, teiku, you can see that the gra takes out the word teiku. The Tosafot over here says, lo garsin and teiku, because what's the relevance of teiku over here? Teiku is used when you have a halachic question, and the halachic question is unresolved. We don't have a halachic question over here. Here we're talking about how to explain the position. It's true that in other places, Nazir, they use tibai to replace teiku. We've also seen the word teiku be used in Nazir, but that might be other evidence of the fact that maybe the girsa shouldn't be teiku over here, because in the Gemara Nazir, typically it would use the word tibai, and therefore maybe that's another good reason to believe that the girsa should not be teiku over here. So the Tosafot and the Gra say to take out the word teiku because it's not relevant over here. They're just trying to understand Rabbi Meir's position and how that can be explained within the position of Chizkiya. It's not a looking question, it's an explanatory question, which is, how do we figure out what Chizkiya was saying, or who does Chizkiya's position match with? On the other hand, some say that you can leave in the word teiku, because you could make it into a looking question is, what's Chizkiya's position? Then, if you're going to paskin like Chizkiya, what's the meaning of Chizkiya's position? Is Chizkiya's position like Rabbi Meir? Is Chizkiya's position differentiated from Rabbi Meir? And therefore, the question is a question of shiur. And therefore, now we leave it as a teiku, which is if you pass him like Chizkiya, what's the shiur that Chizkiya is speaking about? Is he speaking about a shiur that's domeh le Rabbi Meir? Or is he speaking about a shiur that is differentiated in some way from Rabbi Meir? Or if you say this has relevance in other places where the Gemara uses the terminology mikishrei etzbotav, and the way that Rav Shimi is explaining now, that is not equal to the knuckles to the tips of the fingers is not equal to the knuckles to the wrist, then it has halakhic implications in other places in Shas. And that's why there is a teku over here, because there is halakhic ramifications to his position against the explanation of the Gemara. And that's why this machloket of explanation turns out to have halakhic ramifications. Okay, we're going to stop here by the bottom of Nun Amud Beth.